Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Miles Podcast. This is Stephen Miller, your host. Today's guest, we have Joy Guzman-Cuffell from California, who is a licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm really excited about it because it's offering a side of the fertility world that we often do not talk about. And it's not necessarily even in the mainstream ideas of what like fertility treatments look like. So Joy is part of the LGBT community, and him and his husband did surrogacy, right? And I'm happy and glad that he's here to kind of share that experience with us. So welcome, Joey. If you want to introduce yourself and kind of share about your experience.
All right. Awesome. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for having me on your podcast today. I'm really excited to be able to talk about my experience and to give some information on family building when it comes to surrogacy or third-party reproduction. So as Stephen said, my name is Joey Guzman-Cuffell, and I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. I'm based in California, but licensed in multiple states. I am part of the LGBTQ community, and I had my own family building process. My family building process consisted of using third-party people to help me grow my family with my husband. So to start off, you know, we used an egg donor, and then we used a surrogate to help us carry our daughter. We have a daughter. She's about to be 3 years old. And we are currently going through another surrogacy journey. So I'm really, this is actually the first time that I'm sharing this. I know nobody else knows this yet, but we're doing another surrogacy journey. And, you know, when it comes to fertility or infertility, you know, they really don't look at, you know, gay men as having infertility issues. But the truth of the matter is that we need fertility treatments because two men biologically cannot have a child. So, you know, but by definition and the standards when it comes to insurances and guidelines and policies, it just, it, we don't qualify for those types of treatments because it's not defined as LGBTQ people or folks having infertility struggles. But we needed some assistance, and it was difficult to, at the beginning, to navigate, you know, the process, because there wasn't a lot of information out there about how to build our family in the way that we wanted to build our family. We knew that we wanted to have a child, and came across, you know, San Diego Fertility Center, and they had an LGBTQ section that provided a lot of information regarding, you know, the possibilities of building a family through third-party reproduction, through an egg donor, or a surrogate, a gestational carrier. And so that's where kind of we started. We based all of our information off of what San Diego Fertility Center was providing us. And although it was a lot of information and helpful information, we were still just kind of stuck because they really guided us through, you know, creating our embryos. And so there was a whole other separate section apart from creating your embryos, which is the surrogacy piece. And, you know, they had some helpful tips, but it's a different section from what they do. And so they helped us, you know, create our embryos by using an egg donor and then having the sperm to create that embryo. Our donor is my sister. So my sister, I have four sisters, and we were very fortunate that every one of them offered to help in this process, whether if it was to be a gestational carrier for us or to be a donor. And so we had my sisters donate their eggs for us, and which was amazing. Again, we're very blessed that that was the case, because that allowed for us to really have a genetic tie to our child, both of us.
Right.
It wasn't just going to be one, right? It was going to be both of us. And that was unique in our process, is that we had that opportunity.
I would imagine, though, too, that also probably saved some money, too. I mean, because I know with surrogacy, I mean, financially, like, it is one of the more costlier routes to build your family and stuff. So being able to have family helping out probably helped quite a bit in that aspect.
Yeah, and thank you for bringing that up, Stephen. You're right. So it was, you know, It was it's where we saved some money. It was, you know, my sisters being able to do this. They weren't looking for any compensation. They wanted to really help us. And so their acts were altruistically, and they didn't want anything from us. And so we obviously covered the medical expenses that went with their treatment, but it did save us a lot of money, which we were going to need. We were going to need that, you know, for the actual surrogacy process. So that was very helpful because it could be very costful for the egg donor process. I mean, it could range, I don't know, anywhere between maybe $20,000 to maybe $50,000, depending on, you know, the medical treatment, you know, the egg donor, whether if it's a first time donor or a second or an experienced donor. I mean, there's just the prices vary depending on where you go to. So they really helped us out with that piece. And so once we created our embryos, now we were like, well, what next, right? So we needed a surrogate. And so we did some more research, and then we came across an organization called Men Having Babies. And I believe that they were in their infancy stage in their infancy stage. I think they were like maybe 2 or 3 years old or something like that. But they had a lot of more information that was amazing. And they really helped us with the surrogacy piece. They helped us match, you know, through one of their programs to match with an agency who then matched us with their surrogate. And so even with their assistance, because they have grants, and they have a program called the General Parenting Assisting Program. They have stage one and stage two, and they offer different benefits. My husband and I applied for this because we needed all the help that we can get. I mean, it was really expensive. And so, but even with their assistance, it was still very expensive. And so they helped us, guide us to match with the agency. The agency matches with the surrogate. Then we had an issue with our first surrogate. Our first surrogate wasn't responding to the fertility treatments or the medical treatment that she was receiving to prepare the uterus for that embryo transfer that we're so longly waiting for. And we attempted 3 tries to transfer this embryo, but every time we would go in, you know, she had fluid in the uterine cavity. And so you're not supposed to have fluid in the uterine cavity for the transfer. And so our doctor, after, you know, 3 attempts, and I have to say that every time that we went in for attempt, so we couldn't do the embryo transfer, and then we had to wait a whole month before we can do another transfer in a whole month. So it just kind of keeps prolonging and prolonging.
So what was that experience like? Because like oftentimes with fertility, like a lot of us have had those disappointments, you know, like month after month after month, right? And there, like you said, you had 3 attempts to do an embryo transfer, but they all ended up canceling the cycle and you have to wait another month. What was that like on your emotions, like in your kind of mental health during that time? Because I'm sure that probably would be a hard thing.
It was hard. It was really hard because at this point, Stephen, we were already like on year number 3. So from when we started our research for our embryo development or creation, it had already been 3 years until we got to, you know, the surrogate part. And so having to be told like, hey, we have to retry again, it was almost like it was taking like I was losing hope. It just kind of became where I was becoming numb, just because the disappointment was really big. This was something that my husband and I have wanted for so long, and there was already challenges before we even started for us being gay men, that it just felt like, you know, it's not going to happen. So for me, it was like that narrative that I was giving myself that was really influencing the way how I was feeling, is like, it's not going to happen, you know. So then I felt really disappointed, and then afterwards I was being very pessimistic, and I didn't even know if I wanted to move forward anymore. Because I was just so disappointed. It was taking a toll on my mental health, and it was also taking a toll on my relationship. Like, I started acting differently towards my spouse, and he had nothing to do with it. I mean, this was out of our control, but you know, these are the things that just kind of happened. And but I had to I had to reframe my thought process, and I had to, shift my narrative, and I had to tell myself, like, okay, so it didn't work out. And, the surrogate's being great about it. And I also felt like I had to support her because she felt really bad that it didn't happen. And so it's almost like I kind of also had to shelf like my emotions to be able to support her. And so that was hard because I know that I was feeling all these emotions, but I felt like I needed to put them on hold too to be able to support her. But again, coming back to where I reframed my thought process and said, like, okay, she really wants to do this for us. We've gotten this far. Like, it'll happen. Our time will come. Just keep going along. I started to just really think positively about this, these times that we didn't get to do a transfer. And it really helped in just kind of regaining some sense of hope and just being like, okay, good. We've waited this long. It'll happen at some point. Just, be okay. Be okay. And so it took me till that third embryo transfer attempt where we couldn't do it again. And so that's when our fertility doctor said, I think you guys need to look for a new surrogate. And that was kind of like a punch in the stomach because that meant we had to start all over. And what was that wait time going to be like? And sometimes there's like a shortage of surrogates, and you're on a wait list for maybe over a year. And I was like, at this point, I was 37. And so for me, it was like my own biological clock was ticking. I kept thinking of the age, and I was so afraid of being a lot older and having a child a lot older because I was like, I want to be able to do all the things that a young parent can do with their kids. And I didn't want to be an older parent. So all of that was on my mind, and it was really like weighing on me. My spouse is 7 years older than me. And so for him, it was also on his mind. And his father and mother had him when his father was 47. So he got that experience with his dad. He's like, although it was great, I kind of want to be a younger dad so that I can do all these things that my dad didn't get to do with me at some point in his, adolescence. And so it was hard. It was hard, but luckily it didn't take a year to match with a new surrogate. Our agency was really great about rematching us within 3 months after that last, failed attempt where we had to switch surrogates. And then the other thing is too, like, I had already built a great relationship with, the first surrogate. I felt like it was like a breakup of some sort. Of course, we're still friends and we still communicate, but I felt like we went through this together. And now it's like to switch over to somebody else. It's like, how do you do that, right? And will we really connect with this second person?
And I want to go back to something that you said about when the, transfers, like when their cycle's canceled and you felt like you had to be a support for her and kind of putting yourself on the shelf, right? And it was interesting because I see like a lot of men, whether they're in same sex, like or opposite sex relationships, a lot of men will do that. Like they will, I have my own stuff. If you need help, I'm going to put my stuff on the shelf, like, and I just thought it was an interesting aspect of my journey. I also wanted to go back and ask about what is that process like for surrogacy? Because like, I know you and I know like that there's psych evals, there's a whole process, right, to it. And I think I want to highlight that as well, because I think a lot of people will, like be just doing IVF and like or IUI, and it's highlighting what is the process for surrogacy. So what was that process? What did that look like in your situation?
Yeah, so you do have to go through psychological educational consultations for intended parents, and the surrogates have to go through a full-on evaluation. But prior to having an embryo transfer done, the intended parents, my husband and I, we had to meet with a therapist to process all of the what ifs, all of the hypotheticals, the possibilities, so that we understand, emotionally and cognitively, like what it would be like if we have a failed embryo transfer, or what it would be like if we were confronted with difficult situations, like if the embryo split and there's complications and you have to do selective reduction or termination of pregnancy. What if your child has Down syndrome? What would you do then? Like, have you thought about that? How would it impact you? We go through different topics that are challenging and also things that make you think twice, and maybe that also kind of just shifted the way how you think about things. And it also really highlights, like, are you and your partner on the same page? And I think that these consultations are important so that you understand what to expect, not just for the process, but also like what's expected between you and your partner, and are there any differences there? And it was a really important thing. And I think, honestly, looking back, I think that consultation that I had with the therapist is what also made those experiences for me. Even though I was going through disappointment, it was taking a toll on me, and I was losing hope. Like, I knew that could happen. Something like that could happen, because I remember going over those types of scenarios in my consultation with my therapist. And so I think, honestly, I think that is also what allowed me to reshape my, or reframe my thought process around, how do I move forward? I mean, it wasn't like I was blindsided with this information or this the stuff that happened, because I had gone over it with a therapist. And so although you go through it and it prepares you for it, it doesn't take away the emotion. However, I feel like I was able to handle it in a healthy way.
Yeah. So were there any like disagreements between you and your husband, like when you were going through those therapy sessions and stuff, and you were looking at the what ifs? Were there some things that were some difficult conversations?
You know what? I think that in the consultation, there wasn't much that we disagreed. I mean, I don't think there was anything that we disagreed on, really. Okay. It wasn't until after the fact that's when I noticed the difference. So in that consultation, they talk about, if you're pregnant with multiples, and you have to do selective reduction, like, what are your thoughts? It seemed like my husband and I were like on the same page. Like, if there was complications, obviously we want to put the health of the surrogate first, and we would follow medical recommendations, even around Down syndrome, like, how do you feel about that? And that was something that, is very sensitive and delicate, and we seem to, agree on that. But because this process for surrogacy, a lot of times, more so for gay men, but it can also be for heterosexual couples too that go through surrogacy. But we did a 2-embryo transfer. And the reasoning for that is because we wanted to have more than one child. And we didn't really want it to be twins, but because it was also very expensive, we didn't see ourselves going through this process again, because it was so expensive and we had no insurance coverage, and it was a lot. And so we said, well, let's just do 2 embryos. If we have twins, then that would be great. We have our 2 children, and then we don't have to go through another journey and pay another $150,000, $160,000, $170,000 to go through this process, and we did do an embryo transfer, a double embryo transfer. And one of the things that we review in the consultation again is, what if it splits? What if an embryo splits? Because there is a slight, chance that can happen. I was aware of this. My husband was aware of this, but we thought, okay, what are the chances if the chances are small? And so what I learned is, you shouldn't minimize that. You should really always keep it at the forefront. And our embryo did split. And so we were pregnant with triplets. Uh-huh. And so at this time, it was like a shock, but like not a shock. It's like, what? But we're like, we need to talk about this. So it shouldn't really hit us too much like a shock, because we were aware of this. And this is where I noticed that we kind of disagreed is that my husband right away was like very pragmatic about the risks and, you know, and making sure we minimize risk. And there was talk about selective reduction and all of these things. At this point, my emotional brain kicked in and I was like, no, we have to wait. Like, we have to kind of see where we go and let's get our doctor's recommendation. Let's talk to our surrogate, see where she's at. And so he was very set, you know, like, he was more pragmatic and I was more emotional. And this is where we kind of like were disagreeing because we were seeing it from different perspectives. But he was able to allow me the space to just kind of go with what, you know, let's see what happens. Let's get this, you know, information from the doctors. And then I was struggling because I'm like, what if we have to go through this selective reduction piece? And like, you know, my husband seems to be like, you know, very on board with that to reduce any risk. And I was struggling with having to make a decision or to even think about making a decision. And unfortunately, the embryo that split, the twins, they didn't survive. So they passed away in the womb. So it was at around 10 and 11 weeks away because one passed, the heart stopped beating at 10 weeks and the other one at 11 weeks.
Okay.
So, you know, that was a hard thing too. That was like a hard hit in terms of like they were there and not they're not there. And then there was also like this thing about like, I was really sad for the loss, but I was also happy that I didn't have to make a decision. I feel like nature just kind of, you know, did that for me and my husband. And then there was another added, you know, section of like, I was also dealing with like sadness for the loss and the grief with that. And then also like feeling guilty, but also feeling happy that we still had one more child, you know, that was doing so well. And so it's like, how do you balance all of that? You know, with everything that we've gone through to get to that point, you know, and then also finding out that you and your spouse may have different ways of thinking or feeling about selective reduction when you're actually confronted with it, not hypothetically, but when you're actually there.
Yeah.
And I was just like, it was a very overwhelming time for me during that process and during that time.
Yeah. And I can imagine with surrogacy, especially with intended parents, that there's a lot of control that you have to give up.
Absolutely.
And my question is how did you navigate that? Like, how did you handle it? Like, what are things that helped you kind of with that? Because it can be very emotional, you know, like, especially, you know, I feel like a lot of people in their family building journeys, when it's not the normal route, you know, like, or I would say normal route, when they have difficulties with building their family, a lot of them feel out of control and it's hard. We try to find control in other ways. So I guess, like, what are some of the ways that you kind of were able to establish maybe some control, like, or the struggles of that?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Well, you know, and it was a shift too, because at the beginning, it feels like you're really in control. Like, you're making a lot of decisions about who's the donor, who's the surrogate, creating your embryos, and, you know, whether if you're going to have them undergo pre-implantation genetic testing and finding out if they're male or female. Do you want to transfer an embryo that's just female or male? You know, there's a lot of stuff, that decisions that you can control. And then after your surrogate's pregnant, you know, or even just kind of what happens after the transfer, all of those things are out of your control. And so I think that for me, I really wanted to feel safe by having trust in the person who was carrying our child. And so one of the requirements for me when matching with the surrogate was having a connection. I wanted to feel like this person could be my friend because I would trust a friend, you know, and so I wanted to feel like we were friends. And so when we interviewed our second surrogate, you know, we talked about the importance of really connecting and being able to have open communication. And I literally stated, like, I hope that we can, you know, develop a friendship, you know. And both of them were really cool about that. They really were like, that's something that I'm looking for. I don't just want it to feel like transactional. And that's something I didn't want in this exchange. And so both times we were very lucky to work with women where we were able to establish like just like a connection. Like it was like an organic, it felt right. And it felt right in my gut. And because of this, and because what we established, it was okay for me to let go of control because I felt like I trusted this person. And these women know about pregnancy, something that I don't know about. They're the experts in being pregnant. So it was like trusting them because I was also telling myself, they're experts in this. They've done this before. They have children of their own. I can trust them. Right. I have the friendship piece there. And I also know that they know about things that I don't know. So I have to. And so a part of it is like that, you know, just that, I don't know, feeling of trust, but also just telling myself, I can trust this person. I can trust this person. And that made it very easy to let go of some of that control. And I was also honest with the surrogate during our interviews about like what my anxieties were, like what could be my possible like struggles with this process. And she was like, I got this. And honestly, she made it so easy for me throughout the whole journey that there was not once where I felt anxiety, because she was always providing me with updates and information even before I picked up my phone to even check in with her. So it was fantastic that she understood what I needed. She met my needs essentially, where I felt like I don't need them anymore because she's meeting them.
What was it like when you meet with the match, and putting myself in your shoes, like I feel like that would be very nerve wracking to meet, like, yeah, because you have the expectations, you have your like your own kind of thoughts of what you would want, like. Like, was that initial meeting, you know, like with at least, especially with your first surrogate that you guys, you know, attempted with, was that pretty nerve wracking for you?
You know what? The first time wasn't very nerve wracking, and this is the reason why. So one of my friends who learned about surrogacy, you know, through me, you know, he went a different route. He did an independent journey where he found his own surrogate. He had no agency like I did. They were able to have their child, you know, within that year that he started. So he had the child way before I did, and I had already been on the journey for 3 years. He had interviewed so many surrogates that he found on Facebook, and he recommended this one gal that lived in California, which I am from California. I thought, what a great thing. So I consulted with my husband. I said, what do you think about that? Because we just don't know what comes from Facebook. And so we want to, you know, there's no, you know, agency screening them or anything like that. And so he said, well, I don't know, but, and I don't, well, let me just check. You know, I had that little itch to be like, because I wanted to move on this process as quickly as possible. So I checked in with her and we talked over the phone, and it felt like this is an immediate connection. There was a lot of similarities that we had, you know, with our cultures and backgrounds and where we lived, and similarities in our relationships. And it felt really nice to connect with her on so many different levels. And so I asked her, you know, would you be open to meeting with our agency and letting them do the full screen? Plus, she had already been a surrogate before.
Okay.
So I think that part also made it very easy for me to not feel nervous. And so from the get-go, it just felt great. The second time, I was more nervous because I didn't meet her prior to the agency. The agency was presenting it to me. And, you know, I at first I was a little hesitant. I was like, I don't know, this feels good. And I don't remember exactly what it was, but there was something that was in the profile that made me a little bit uncomfortable. So I related this to my spouse, and he was like, no, well, maybe you're reading it wrong, or you know, just going with an open mind. And I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. So we go in, and I was already kind of like, okay, I might not like this person. I don't know. But then we start talking. And then I was like, what was I worried about? Like, I think once you kind of break the ice and you start talking, plus the agency also kind of guides you. They have, you know, like questions and topics that you need to address in that meeting so that you understand, like, where do you stand and do you align on all these important things that are highly important to be able to move forward in a surrogacy journey. And we just seemed to vibe really well. Her spouse was, so she was also a same-sex couple. So she and her wife had, you know, they had a daughter 7 months prior to her wanting to be a surrogate. Plus, she had already donated her eggs, I think, 6 times prior to that. She really
Okay.
wanted to help everybody. She understood what her journey was like as a same-sex couple and the struggles they went through. And so she wanted to give back to others. And so, yes, I went into it feeling nervous and hesitant and skeptical. But after we broke the ice and we started talking, I realized we have a lot in common. Again, we vibe on the friendship piece. I feel like I can trust her. Like, this is good.
So I want to ask you one more question, and it's more of like a deeper question. So you may not have a true answer to this, but I remember I'm in school for my master's in social work. And I remember one of my classmates and I were talking about this and how his sister is lesbian. And I see a lot of those in the LGBT community, because of the cost of surrogacy, they have to either pick either like graduate school, like you have to pick graduate school, like, or you have to basically go without a child, you know, like, or, you know, you have to pick between the two, you know, between trying to build a family or if you want to go to graduate school and have a career. What are your thoughts on ways that we can reduce that barrier to be able to have the access and stuff to that family building?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's something that I was confronted with myself. You know, I think bringing more awareness to what infertility looks like, you know, for everyone, you know, bringing more awareness to the struggles that heterosexuals, you know, couples, you know, deal with, LGBTQ couples, but also single parents. You know, I mean, I think the more that we talk about this and raise more awareness and, you know, do our part in terms of, you know, participating in the event that we just did not so long ago with Resolve, you know, Resolve.
Right.
And making sure that we advocate, you know, to change, you know, the legislation around, you know, insurance and coverage and making sure that everyone has the right to build their family. I think these are some of the things that we can get involved in to start making some shift and some changes. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, men having babies, you know, like I said before, you know, they're an organization who are in their 10th year, and they've done so well at taking like these big strides to bring awareness to how gay men can build their families. And even if they don't get assistance through them, they have all these amazing resources of, you know, how do you navigate surrogacy? How do you navigate building this family? You know, who's there to support you for, you know, in every step of the way. And they do really well at doing conferences, not just in the United States, but also in Europe, to bring awareness to, you know, what's available. And, you know, again, there's Resolve, you know, there's a lot of organizations that do a lot of this work. But I think that, you know, one thing that I learned from Resolve is that you yourself can start like going to check in with like your human resources department and start the conversation there about like, hey, what is the coverage? How can we get coverage? Like, you know, so that they can start, you know, making some moves and hopefully, you know, contracting with insurance carriers who can, you know, supply the coverage necessary for everyone who wants to build a family, but are facing some challenges with that.
So I know like we're probably coming up close to time, but I know that, like you said, you guys were successful, like, and have a child together. And I would love to have you on another time because like, I would be interested in hearing like that process, like, you know, from like the time that you found out that she was expecting, where was pregnant, to delivery, right, and navigating that as an intended parent, you know, like through that experience and stuff, because I'm sure, like I said, like at that point you don't have any control, like, and you had that trust factor, but I'm sure that there were some things that probably happened throughout that journey that kind of threw some loops, you know, like and everything. So I would love to have you back and discuss that aspect as well. But like, I really appreciate you taking the time to be talking about like the surrogacy aspect of it and really enlightening us with like what that was like.
Sure. I Stephen, I think I would love to join you again to kind of walk you through the other piece of my journey. It's been amazing to talk to you and kind of share some of these pieces with you.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know right now I'm looking at scheduling stuff in January. So, because this semester is going to be crazy busy, but I will definitely be in touch. So thanks again.
Thanks for listening to the Miles Podcast. If you could rate and subscribe, leave a comment, and just any feedback really would be greatly appreciated to help this podcast reach a farther audience for other men and other people that are listening and could benefit from hearing other people's experiences with infertility. It can be followed on Instagram as jmiller2024 or the Miles Podcast. I'm also on Twitter as well. I hope that you enjoyed this episode with Joy, and I'm definitely planning on having him back to discuss the second part of his journey, which the pregnancy and stuff with the surrogate. I really just appreciate him being able to share that experience and enlightening all of us that about what his experience was and learning from that experience. So once again, thank you for listening to this episode, and glad that you're coming along with me on this miles-long journey.